Hello and welcome to Digital Careers, which offers insights and advice to advance your digital career, as well as make your digital hiring more effective. And this is our first podcast of 2021, so a happy new year to you all. And my guest today is Ben Rhodes, who is the former Group Marketing Director of Royal Mail in the UK, having worked in the company for 10 years, and he was previously Head of Brand Marketing for MasterCard. Importantly, Ben has a considerable amount of experience working within digital, including digital transformation. So he's well qualified to discuss today's topic that digital in isolation isn't the silver bullet for companies. So I hope you enjoy the show. Ben Rhodes, delighted to have you on the show. Thanks for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be here. Looking forward to it.
Well, look, let's talk about today's conversation. So we've headlined this digital, not the silver bullet for companies. And this was something that I thought would be a relevant conversation because so many of the senior digital execs I'm speaking to have that view that sometimes digital is this word that's thrown around as the apparent solution to every company's problems. And 2020, we saw a lot of evidence of disparity, I suppose, between the digitally have and the digitally have nots. It isn't a magic switch, as I think we'll probably both conclude at the end of this discussion, that companies and senior executives can switch on to transform an organization. And there's a lot of other factors that come into play to make digital transformation or digital evolution a success. So that was really the purpose of the podcast. But before we launch into the discussion and the debate, a couple of minutes about you, in particular your last sort of 10 to 15 years of experience, and particularly where you've had the digital exposure. I suppose that's really where most people are interested listening into this.
In a nutshell, I spent the first 10 years of my career working in ad agencies for large blue chip brands in the UK, but also internationally. Then I moved in-house, went to MasterCard, and I launched a number of things there that people might know. Contactless payments in the UK, probably the most well-known, and the priceless advertising campaign, which I ran, and the sponsorship assets for about 5 years. Then I moved to Royal Mail, initially in a kind of brand marketing role, but over the last 3 years as Group Marketing Director, I was responsible for all of digital and the marketing activity. And in fact, part of my remit was restructuring the digital and marketing teams into one cohesive unit, as opposed to two separate silos, and pulling that together, which was quite an ambitious project for the organization in the state of evolution that it was in at the time. But very much needed. And, you know, and during that time, I led a number of transformation projects across the digital estate to effectively improve the customer experience is the best way of describing it. So yeah, whether that was replatforming websites, moving on to mobile first technology, whether that was introducing AI and voice search, whether that was establishing social media practice within the organization, you know, there was a huge amount of change. And of course, with that change, it wasn't just about the technology. I mean, obviously, that's important. And in a, you know, in a large organization with a very big sort of brownfield estate of technology and data, quite complex putting stuff in. But there was also a huge amount of culture change and training, and actually governance change, process change. Really, really, really important to make digital successful. You really had to change the way that you thought about things and did activities. You know, and I learned very quickly that if you didn't do that, if you didn't operate in a very different way, then you know, the investments were, you know, wasted because the technology just simply wasn't used or it was underutilized.
Yeah. The business that you're in, I mean, the Royal Mail business, I mean, some people perhaps wouldn't understand the complexity of an organization like that. But how much of a role did digital play in improving that whole customer experience?
Oh, gosh. I mean, you know, when I joined Royal Mail back in 2010, there was no digital at all, really. I mean, there was a website, but, you know, but across the operation, nobody knew what was in the pipeline. I mean, literally, customers would turn up with sacks of mail with a handwritten note on saying there's 100 items in here, and they would be billed 100 items if we remembered to build them. No idea what was, you know, what was in the network, where it was and how it was delivered. Everything was done manually, counted manually. At a broad digital level, across, you know, that decade, a huge amount of time and effort was spent effectively digitizing the pipeline, putting barcodes on letters, putting barcodes on parcels, creating kind of engines that could drive all of that, putting an entire new parcel system in so that you could track items and just catch up with the market. So effectively, what we did was create an intelligent network as opposed to a dumb network. And from a marketing perspective, it was more greenfield to begin with, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, when I joined Royal Mail, they spent more money on Yellow Pages ads than they did on Google. And, you know, the entire mindset was, unsurprisingly, about how to use direct mail to acquire customers as opposed to any other channel. So it was quite a challenge, actually, to kind of bring it into, you know, the 21st century.
Well, I'm sure through this conversation, we'll be able to pull out a few case studies or examples that you've got learnings from. But the first question I've really got for you is around this whole idea of oversimplification, because I think we both agree there's a lot of this waving the magic wand type analogy and digital is going to sort out companies' problems. But it's sometimes one of these things that if it's met with this big fanfare of trumpets as the savior to an organization, it often just doesn't work. Perhaps you can just give me a few thoughts on that, because you've clearly seen evidence of that yourself, either within companies you've worked in or other organizations that you've looked on at from afar, to give you more perspective. But let's talk through that. Where have you seen examples of that, and why do you have that view?
Perhaps a way of thinking about this is to look at sort of an analogous time in business transformation. So, you know, if you jump back to the Industrial Revolution and big steel mills or big mills placed by rivers, and then electricity in the 1880s was kind of invented, and they just bolted engines on to replace the water wheel, you know, and a lot of companies just did that, and it became a bit more efficient and they could save a bit more money, and that was great. You jump forward 20 or 30 years and there's businesses that haven't just done that. They've said, well, actually, I don't need to be by a river and I don't need one great big crankshaft. I could have lots of small ones. And in fact, I can even have some windows now and make it more pleasant for people to work in the operation. And I can move close to cities and I can do all sorts. And suddenly you've massively transformed industries and actually created more work for people. And I think in many ways, when we think about digital today and when businesses adopt digital, they sort of take the first approach, certainly large businesses that are established legacy businesses. They just bolt stuff on and just make things a bit better, or they bring digital in to help drive efficiency and reduce costs, and they stop there. And they never really adopt a digital mindset and really understand, you know, the potential of what it could do for their business and potentially change their business model. And the issue with that becomes, you know, is the world keeps on turning and smaller companies come in and they have digital at their core. They start off with a digital proposition and, you know, they can very, very, very quickly in today's world gobble up market share. Partly because they can do things very cheaply, but actually, more importantly, they've built a different proposition, a proposition that uses that digital technology in a way that the larger, more established companies just haven't even thought about, didn't think was possible, had no notion. And that's part of the issue. And so it goes for me, it actually goes back to a kind of broader transformation culture, kind of upskilling challenge that a lot of businesses have, because it's not just about the technology and digital. It's really about how an organization thinks and works and how willing it is to change and how able the employees are to kind of run with that. And I think it's a real tension in business. I think for larger businesses, it's incredibly difficult. We found that at Royal Mail, it's very, very difficult. Time and time again, you do some form of transformation of a process, you automate it, what have you. But the resistance was massive because actually we hadn't changed the processes around it. We hadn't really upskilled people enough, or indeed thought enough about the right capabilities that we needed to have in those roles to actually make the digital technology work to its full potential.
Yeah,
you only have to go to kind of Harvard Business Review or any of the large consultants, and they will reel off the facts of, you know, how many business cases never actually realize their true benefit and how many transformations fail. I mean, more than succeed. And that's not because of the technology and the digital. It's to do with the understanding of what digital technology really can do and the appetite for embracing that and change, which comes from the top, but it's implemented by people down below.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, what I'm hearing in there is that at the end of the day, and somebody else said this on a podcast I ran a few months ago, is that he was getting a bit cross with the whole idea that digital was this this sort of wonderful thing that you just tap a button and it's all fixed. And he said, actually, it's really about having effective business models. And I think that's largely what you're saying. It comes back to the thinking from a management team, a board of directors around how does digital actually allow us to change our business model and or at least to use it more efficiently in order to improve our business model. I think that's what you're really saying. It's not the bells and whistles part that you just come along, bolt onto the edge and everything's good.
Yes, I mean, I think that's right. I think there's short-term bits that which kit can kind of really help with, right? And it can optimize and it can help you save money and maybe reach more customers more efficiently. But that's really scratching the surface of what digital can do. And yeah, I increasingly believe we're absolutely in a paradigm shift around mobile technology, 5G, broadband everywhere, machine learning, AI, all of that stuff. There is a huge opportunity for businesses to embrace that and look at their business model in the same way, I guess, that, you know, Steve Jobs did back in the day with iPods and App Store and iPhone and iTunes. I mean, iTunes was just brilliant. I mean, iTunes basically turned the entire music industry on its head.
Yeah.
You know, and it said, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have a very expensive bit of kit and I'm going to make the songs incredibly cheap. You know, the opposite of a kind of printer model, you know, where printers are cheap, but the ink's really expensive. And they're just the opposite of the existing music industry model, which is you have to buy an album that's going to cost you a tenner. Well, you don't need to do that anymore.
Mm.
Absolute genius, but brought about by the digital technology. So it's about having that insight and that understanding and frankly, courage to test those things and see if they work.
Yeah.
And a lot of businesses, certainly the businesses I've been involved with, their courage is tempered by the environment that they're operating in, whether that's heavy regulation, whether it is particularly conservative attitude to risk brought down by the board, or just the management culture in itself. And I think, you know, that there'll be businesses that can break through that and they can drive forward and they've probably got a rosy future. And there'll be businesses that just refuse to adopt it, like Kodak or what have you, they can't change their business model because it's too scary. So they don't. And then, you know, 5-10 years later, they've gone.
Complacency creeps in and almost like the worry of, you know, throwing the baby out with the bathwater type analogy if they change too much. But interesting.
But also, I guess, you know, I suppose pertinent to this time, guys, is, you know, we're operating in challenging trading conditions and a lot of businesses are really thinking week to week, month to month. And so the danger, and it's very difficult for them to lift their heads above the parapet, but the danger is they're making kind of tactical decisions and they're dressed up as strategy about, you know, opening up new channels or moving D2C or whatever they're doing. They're not, and I've had, you know, direct experience of this with some of the companies that I've been advising over the last sort of 4 or 5 months. And, you know, they're not thinking about the longer term impacts. They're not really, really actually understanding the risks of what they're doing as well as, you know, the true opportunities either. That the better kind of rounded management teams will be able to kind of see their way through.
How are you advising people to take a more long-term mindset? Because it's a tough call, isn't it, at the moment? Because there's so many people, organizations that are struggling to break even, managing their cost lines. You know, somebody I was listening to the other day said the only certainty we have at the moment is that the future is going to be pretty uncertain, at least for the next 3 to 6 months. And that's very accurate, although perhaps an overused phrase at the moment. How have you been advising people to sort of make that mindset shift to look a little more strategically, a little more long-term?
My approach has been just to make sure that the foundations are really solid. Because I, in my experience, if you've got a very, very strong set of kind of core principles driving the business, then actually, more often than not, they will see you through. And what I found with the businesses I've been working with is that actually some of those foundations aren't as strong as they could be. And that is going to create problems for them, which they can see going forward. So let's say, I've been working with a company, it's a sports equipment manufacturer. He normally, well, in the past, only sold through a sales force to schools and clubs, you know, cricket kit, rugby kit, stuff like that.
Yeah.
In the first lockdown, he couldn't do that. And you know, because they were all shut, they weren't doing anything. So he had to build a D2C proposition. Been hugely successful. I mean, he's had about 40% growth in his e-commerce business. And, you know, with furlough and various things, he's actually managed his profit line fairly well. Actually, it's down, but it's not a disaster. But what he's realized very quickly is that to really win in D2C, he needs to have a strong brand. And he hasn't got a clue what his brand stands for his customers. He doesn't actually, he can't articulate clearly why it is important, you know, at a proposition level, why customers should buy his products. He can do it for clubs, but he can't do it for individuals. So, you know, that's something that just needs to be fixed. It's not a terribly difficult thing to fix, to be honest with you. The answer is probably there, and it doesn't take long to find out, but you've got to sort that out. And the same really with, you know, channels, with channel mix. There is a, McKinsey call it harmonization, which is probably quite a good term. You've got to balance out what you're using different channels for. It's no good just going headlong into one channel past the initial thrill of getting some sales. You've really got to work out, well, what does this mean to my retailer relationships? What does this mean if I start drop shipping on Amazon to get rid of stock and undercutting myself down the line? I'm creating, you know, what does this mean in the minds of consumers about when they think about my products? So they can always get them cheaper if they get Amazon. That's not the right operating model. So there's all these things that need to be worked through, but they don't need to be big, head scratchy, blue sky strategy moments at all. They can be very practical. It's about just getting the basics right.
Yeah. And on that subject, I mean, the solid brand foundation is one of the three or four pillars, I suspect, of giving digital the greatest chance of success. If you were to pick another two or three things, what would you say would be on your recommended checklist?
You've absolutely got to know who your customers are. And I know that sounds blindingly obvious, but you'd be surprised actually at the lack of insight as to who is it that is meant to be in market to buy my products and services. And what is, and this is important because, you know, whilst customer sort of motivations rarely change, you know, people haven't evolved emotionally that much over the last 1 million years. I mean, it's the same things that drive them to buy things, but their purchase behavior and their expectations will have changed because they've had effectively 10 months of really only be able to buy online. The bit to look at is, who are my best bet customers now? Where's the most value? Where's the biggest value pool? And what are their expectations? And how have those expectations changed? You know, so that's critical. So you're pointing your sales gun in the right direction at the right value pool. But then the next bit that you then need to look at is, well, is my value proposition now correct? Not necessarily the product, but the way I am dressing it up, the features, the service, the experience that goes around it. You know, is my channel strategy right? Am I easy to buy? You know, can they find me really, really easily? That's another thing that needs to be really looked at as well. But, you know, so you've got your brand, you've got your audience and your segmentation around that. You've then got your value proposition, and then you've got to look at the channels that you're going to market to make sure that they can find you and they can buy you really easily.
Okay, good. And you obviously, you know, we're seeing a lot of evidence of this in 2020. So you talked about big, more cumbersome organizations that haven't necessarily been born out of the internet. They're potentially at a disadvantage to organizations that have been and have embraced digital from day one and the internet from day one. From your experiences, what are the hardest things that companies grapple with to try and digitally transform? And I use this term digitally transform, and it suggests there's two very distinct buckets. I sort of said the haves and the have nots, and it's not as binary as that, as we both know. Companies that have more of a traditional legacy versus, you know, the Googles, the Amazons that have developed in the, you know, late 90s, early noughties, they've got to still evolve. They've still got to embrace the changes in technology. So I'm not suggesting for a moment that those organizations don't have to digitally transform as well. But I tend to sort of think of it as digital evolution and then as digital transformation for the John Lewis's and company. You know, and I'm picking on John Lewis only because I have a bit of a soft spot for them, and I always try and buy from a John Lewis versus an Amazon. There seems to be this sort of, you know, anti-Amazon sentiment kicking into certainly a lot of people I speak to. Let's tackle those companies that fall into the more traditional bucket. What are the things, and maybe the Royal Mail is a good example of this one. What were the things that you thought were the hardest things to get the wheels turning on that transformation?
The initial piece, actually the hardest bit at Royal Mail, was getting the business case signed off. It wasn't that people didn't want for example, a web platform that was in service. They wanted that. It wasn't that they didn't want to reduce operating costs by you know, bringing in-house rather than outsourcing absolutely everything to a large service provider, you know, the kind of development tools. It wasn't that they didn't want that. But what they really struggled with, apart from the large amount of money that it was going to cost, was the kind of agile development that we wanted to do. They're so used to what in the technically is known as kind of waterfall type projects, where you spend at least £500,000 up front scoping a project with a massive IT team that literally go through and determine all of the requirements and set out exactly what all the milestones are and how you're going to hit them and what have you. That gives the investment team a lot of confidence, because there's a lot of spreadsheets and PowerPoint and Gantt charts that kind of say this money is going to be spent well. That's not the way that the digital implementation works in general. And you're much better off running it in a truly agile way and doing things in sprints and focusing on where you can get the most value. When I replatformed all of our digital estate, and I did it through an agile methodology, that hardest thing was actually getting them to sign off the budget without the kind of spending a huge amount of money up front to kind of do what they would call kind of due diligence. So that took a lot of persuasion. It took a lot of confidence building, a lot of conversations. And it, you know, and the technology team were right behind the way that we wanted to run it. It was just the senior executives. It was a very different way of having to think, a very different, and they didn't really have a financial approval process. Remember, these big organizations are all built around processes. They didn't really have one for Agile. Mm. It was a nightmare for them. It took the CFO had to take what he described as a leap of faith in me to deliver it, which was fine because we did deliver it. And it was actually, you know, but the hardest bit was getting the organization to sign off on it. Yeah, this points to a broader issue, which I touched on earlier, which is why are we transforming? And I think quite often there is a real lack of understanding from you know, established senior management teams about, you know, how digital really operates and how you use it to its full potential. And quite often the transformation is about automating a process, reducing costs, potentially reducing the number of people and making things a bit better for customers. But really it's a cost-based investment decision. Mm. And the challenge with that is that's probably, you know, that's important, but it's only half of the job of what digital can actually do once you've got that technology in there. If you only have a cost reduction mindset, an operational efficiency mindset, it's not really a strategy. I mean, businesses should be constantly being more efficient. That's not really a strategy. The strategic part comes in aligning the entire organization around leveraging this technology and creating more value, more experiences for customers, more things that can make money, etc. And I think that's where a lot of legacy businesses really, really, really stumble, because they start off on the wrong foot. They start off with, I'm just going to take some cost out by bringing this in. They don't really say, how can I shift the organization to do things in a more modern way to delight our customers more and make us more money?
So there's a mindset shift piece in there. It's getting the right people in place. How much did you have to hire from outside to get that mentality, that fresh thinking, that kind of willingness to take some risks? Because I hear that a lot from senior execs in the digital world, is that you've got to focus on the mini wins. And I think you've talked about that. You know, you've got to break down a project. You can't just go a transformation. It's the whole company and we're going to do it by the end of 2 years, because it's like a jigsaw puzzle or something that you thread together, I guess. And there's this mindset shift where you've got to accept failure as a bit of an asset within the organization. It's a way of learning, I suppose. So what did you do on the hiring front to kind of address those challenges?
It wasn't just hiring. I'll come on to it as well. It was also kind of governance. It was the giving people the freedom to make decisions and empowering them to fail was equally important. And a very risk-averse organization, that was quite a challenge to be able to do that. But it was really important because we couldn't attract the right talent otherwise.
Yeah.
Or at least we couldn't retain the right talent after we, you know, attracted them. In my experience, there are a lot of technical specialists that you need to pull in, because you may not necessarily have technical development experience in-house. And with digital, more often than not, you actually need to have an on-site dev team that can constantly update and work with managers to kind of improve stuff. That was important. But equally, it goes up right up the line. You need to have people leading the project and working, you know, influencing other stakeholders that really get it. But they've got to be broader than just digital. And that's where the challenge really comes in, because you need to find people who can talk and walk the walk of digital, but they've also got to be very experienced business people, and they've got to understand the other facets of running, you know, of leadership, and the other facets of running a large organization. And that's really challenging. It's really, really challenging.
Yeah.
And you can't really buy that in on consultancy. It's because they've got to be part of the company. They've got to be really part of the fabric to make it work. And so they become quite critical appointments.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't affect that cultural change by just shipping in a load of management consultants. It's really got to be the DNA has got to flow through the veins of, you know, the people working on those transformation projects.
Yeah, I think that's right, because you know, in the kind of standard kind of cycle of performance management, you know, you've got managers in there who are sort of, you know, trying to operate in a more agile way and testing things and seeing what works and what doesn't work. They're going to have their performance reviewed by other managers and you know, they not consultants. It's quite important that there is this ecosystem that you need to create, and that's the only way I can describe it really.
Yeah, fair enough. We're obviously, you know, touching on the people component. I mean, you touched on upskilling and culture. How intrinsic was that within the Royal Mail business? And how much have you seen that within, I don't know, mates who are CMOs or people that have gone through similar experiences? I mean, how much of a factor does that play?
Oh, it's absolutely massive. I mean, one of the things I did in the last couple of years was establish a sort of social media center of excellence centrally within Royal Mail that sort of sat between the marketing teams, the PR teams and the HR recruitment teams, actually, to try and kind of own the kind of experience on various different social media channels and the content calendar and what have you. And I had to do a lot of training, invested quite a lot in training, actually, of the individual teams around the business who were meant to be doing social media, to actually get them to understand that it was a bit more than what they were currently doing at the moment. And there was a best practice, and there was real, you know, there's some great examples of the kinds of things that they should be thinking about and doing. So, you know, an example would be, rather than saying, here's a press release, how do I amplify that on social media, would be, here's a brilliant idea to kind of help manage the reputation of this company. How can I, you know, get them to think, how can I use all of these channels to best affect that, rather than a piece of paper with 300 words written on it? And it became a much richer conversation, but it took a long time to achieve that. I mean, it wasn't, you know, you could do the training and you can bring in talent, but again, that wasn't enough. The bit that made the biggest difference was letting go of the reins and going, do you know what? Really big, important things you need to talk to your manager or me about, but everything else, just go away and do it.
Yeah.
Because by the time you've gone through some kind of approval process, and I've added, you know, 2% of value, the opportunity's gone.
Yeah, exactly.
And the interesting thing about that, I mean, it's quite, in a very heavily regulated business like Royal Mail, that was quite a difficult thing to achieve because culturally everything is very controlled. But what happened over time in doing that is that people could see across these social media channels, we were doing stuff which was getting millions and millions of engagements and actually driving quite a lot of sales. And they wanted a part of that. And so it started to kind of, rather than pushing people towards using the channel, it started to suck people in to use it, which was brilliant, because then you had a captive audience of people who, you know, a coalition of the willing who really wanted to kind of go and do it and who were prepared to, you know, to learn and to kind of really engage with it. And that was when you kind of got the culture change where silos were broken down and people were just thinking much more holistically. But it did take time. It did take time. So training was important, but actually it was really looking at the processes, the governance, and just simplifying all of that and stripping stuff out.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Well, look, final question for me is really just about the hiring within digital piece, because after all, this show is called Digital Careers, and we try and offer insights and advice to people looking to advance their digital career, as well as people looking to hire within digital. And I'm interested to know what you've learned about hiring within digital. And I'm a little reluctant to throw that question as open out there as I have, because digital is such a wide term, right? And it can mean different things to different people. But when you've hired digital specialists in a marketing sense, what are the learnings that you've had over the years? What advice would you pass on to other people when they're going about their digital hiring? Any tips, I suppose?
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, these are all obvious things, really. I mean, the first thing is you've really, really got to know what it is that you're buying.
Yeah.
So you've got to be very, very, very clear on what it is that you really, really want. And if it is just, I don't know, an SEO specialist or a digital analytics specialist, brilliant. You can go out there and you can find the right person for that. And what I would say is that, you know, one of the fascinating things for me, I'm a bit, you know, long in the tooth, is the attitude of a lot of younger digital managers compared to, let's say, you know, back in the 90s when I was more junior, which is, you know, they don't really want to work in the office. They don't really want to work kind of 9 to 5. They're not actually, a lot of them actually aren't particularly loyal. They're quite happy to kind of jump in and out of organizations and move around a bit. And they love variety. And I think you've just really, you know, what I think one of the really interesting things that marketing leaders need to think about at the moment is how much do I insource, how much do I outsource, and what's the cost of insourcing actually to kind of really make this work? Do I want somebody to be in my organization and have a career for 5 or 10 years, or am I quite happy for them to come in and go out every couple of years? And it's quite an important framework to think through, because it will absolutely determine the talent that you're attracting. And there's no right or wrong answer. I mean, for some roles, I've been quite happy knowing that, you know, certainly in SEO, that, you know, I might go through 5 SEO managers in 5 or 6 years. Yeah, that didn't exactly. particularly, yeah. It didn't particularly matter. It was fine. Equally, you know, I might be slightly reticent of spending a fortune trying to train them up when they're on the job if I thought they were going to leave after 3 months. I think that's important. But the other interesting thing is where digital managers, you know, you want to recruit them, but you've got a succession plan, right? Because you can't just have junior people turning around all the time. You know, any department will have a succession plan, hopefully, that looks at people who are ready now, people who are ready in a year, people who are ready in 3 years, whatever, to kind of step up into those management roles. Having run marketing for 10 years in an organization, you know, which is longer than most CMOs work in a role, it gives you a bit of a luxury to actually help craft people's careers and help really develop capability, much more so than somebody who comes in for 18 months or 3 years and buggers off. But then finding the right digital talent that has got the potential to, I guess the HR term is, be kind of T-shaped, to kind of move beyond their specialism into a broader marketing leadership role. That's really challenging. That's really challenging, particularly because digital, certainly in marketing terms, is incredibly technical, more so than you know, when I was a young kind of marketing exec or an advertising exec. It's far more technical. And so to broaden out into kind of adjacent kind of territories or kind of broader leadership capabilities can be really challenging for, you know, what you think are quite exceptional candidates. They're just brilliant at what they do. They find it very difficult to kind of work outside of that. And so I think, you know, trying to identify, you know, what your succession plan looks like, what you want the shape of your department to look like on 2 or 3 years time, and recruiting towards that, I think would, you know, and paying really special attention to the skills that you think you're going to need to have on your management team in a couple of years time when these people progress. That's really, really important.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, look, from my observation, certainly digital roles these days tend to have a slightly more short-term nature to them. So I think you're going to get that inevitable higher level of turnover than perhaps you and I would have seen in the day. And I think digital careers are becoming much less linear and much more, someone used the phrase, squiggly as well. And I think there's an expectation that you do step into new roles that give you more latitude. But that is tough, as you say, with highly technical roles. You know, an SEO role being a classic example. You know, how does somebody, and that's down to the leader, isn't it, to give them the skills and the development to be able to adapt and broaden out in the future. And it's a responsibility of the organization, I guess.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's the same with sort of, you know, managing people as well. I mean, you know, quite often specialists who will do kind of stints in different companies, you know, at some point in time, I don't know, they might settle down a bit more, they might want to stay in a, you know, another company, they want to stay there for longer, and they suddenly find themselves managing 3 or 4 people, community managers or whatever it is, and they haven't got a Scooby about actually how to help shape someone's career or help someone through a performance issue, or indeed, you know, even be, you know, really get to understand the company and actually how it really, really works, so you can take some of those digital skills and you can start influencing and changing the broader organization. The people who can do that are the people who are intrinsically far more valuable to an organization, and certainly from a market, you know, marketing leader's perspective to the department, than specialists who you know are more transactional in their approach to work. But it's incumbent on the recruiting manager, when he's putting together the mandate and the job description, to really, really think through the attributes and the competencies and the skills that you know, and they don't have to be fully fledged, but the potential has to be there. And recruiting to that is really important.
Okay, well, that's a great place to finish, and really appreciate you being involved today. I think we can safely say we've concluded that digital transformation isn't easy, Ben, and that it's multi-layered, it's multifaceted, there's lots of moving parts, there's no flick of a switch and all our problems are solved. And then obviously the backdrop of 2020, when everything is moving so fast, it's like an overlay of further complexity that some organizations are having to face. And I think one thing that 2020 has shown us is that the disparity between companies that have capitalized from COVID versus the ones that haven't been able to adapt or haven't been prepared for something like this is just unbelievable. And in some ways you'd say a little unjust, because the playing field is by no means a level one, but it's sorting out the organizations that are able to adjust and live in a very different future, I suppose. And you touched on that point just a few moments ago about younger digital execs being comfortable in a day-to-day office environment. Well, look how that's changed in the last 6 to 9 months. It's been absolutely huge. But look, fascinating conversation. Really enjoyed that, and appreciate you being involved.
Yeah, I've loved it. It's been really good fun.
Cheers, Ben. I hope you enjoyed the discussion. And as we go into 2021, digital change is going to remain a very hot topic. And so many of Ben's observations and advice is very relevant to businesses looking to evolve. And if you like the content of the show, please give us a rating. And remember, if you're looking for advice on your digital career or looking to hire within digital, please get in touch with me at guy@bartonrock.com or visit my website, bartonrock.com.